Welcome to Talk Is Sheep, the official podcast of the Wild Sheep Society of British Columbia, brought to you by our title sponsor, Mountain Tough Fitness Lab. Come along with us as we take conversations that matter to you into the high alpine. We have partnered with Mountain Tough Fitness Lab to help get you in shape and mentally stronger. Whether you're a veteran hunter just starting out, the Mountain Tough app will take you to the next level. We personally train using the Mountain Tough programs, and we believe in it so much that we want to give you 6 weeks for free using code SHEEPBC. That's SHEEPBC. Check out Mountain Tough Fitness Lab. You won't be disappointed.
Oh, that's all good. We were waiting with anticipation.
Okay, sorry. I waited till last
How's
minute.
How's the foot?
The foot? You want to see it?
Yeah. Yeah, let's see this thing. Okay. Oh. There's no cast. No,
And you're going to Mexico on that still?
Yeah, it's a little questionable what if that was the best decision. I wasn't sure what the status would be of my abilities, but I'm bringing my spotting scope and tripod, and then I'm going to be on kind of glassing duties down below, and I'm just going to tell the boys, like, I can't keep up with you. I'm not going to be like walking around the same speed there when it comes to the bottoms, stuff, but I will hopefully.
Then you're going down there chasing deserts then?
Yeah, just one.
Just one?
Yeah. Well,
when do you go?
like a week from today, I'll be there first evening.
Nice. What's your doctor think of that?
I haven't kept them in the loop, so to say. I haven't asked for permission.
We got to keep the podcast away from them somehow.
Nah, it's all good. They've just told me, like, it's kind of cool. Are we recording right now? Is it all happening?
Everything's happening.
But we'll edit it out. But usually the best stuff is the stuff that we
in the beginning
for anyway.
Well, I just wasn't sure if I should start bantering off all this shit, you know, now, but.
Oh, you got open reins.
We kind of like Tanis Barkman uncut, to be honest. That's the best Tanis Barkman. Like, there's no heavy editing required. It's always the best just in the raw.
Let's go do a hunt together. We'll get the full... the full experience. Yeah.
Oh, dear.
Well, no, basically what you guys were asking about if my doctors were okayed with the whole thing, and it's not. I would definitely say that they have sort of cut me loose just telling me to figure it out, kind of, you know. It's up to my physio and things, and basically I'm very new to walking. It's not a surefire, you know what I mean? Like it's questionable how much I can do. Like today I just left to go pick up this headphone set from my brother's place. And it was the first time I wore both my, my snow winter gum boots, and I didn't bring crutches. So I was wearing two actual matching boots, not my walking boot, because right now I'm finding my walking boots actually hindering me from like movement. It's like stopping me from actually progressing. You know, it sort of binds you up. It keeps you square, and then you can't lean forward, and it's so I kind of want to get my motion, you know what I mean? But that's a tricky game to play, because if you do, you know, teeter, or if something happens and you don't have that true support of that big stiff cast, then you're in trouble, you know.
But what's the weather like? Are you walking out on ice right now in those boots too? Like, were you really gambling today?
Oh yeah. Small steps. My steps are just like tiny. Yeah, just for you guys, just for this headset. I'm glad it worked. No, it was a full swing blizzard that just happened, actually, in Fernie. Big, huge mega dump. And today was like a gorgeous, beautiful bluebird sunny morning with like 2 feet of fresh powder on top of like 2 feet from the day before. And I haven't been such a big snowbird bum in my life for a while, but today was the first time in a long time that I had like true FOMO. I was staring out the window and I was like, oh, I'd love to be up there.
I'd say it's probably a good thing you didn't go, though.
Not a fat fucking chance. We are in slow mo. We are in baby mode here. This is learning to walk baby steps again.
Yeah.
Are you a little bit nervous about Mexico or not really? Like you're just going to take it easy.
Well, the good part about it is that I'm completely amongst friends. Like I'm not traveling just on a whim going, you know, chasing resorts or places. I don't have to do much. Like when I show up, basically our two good friends, Rafa and Roberto, they show up at the airport, they pick us up, like everything, you know, we go into motion right away. But I'd say I'm a little nervous on the, I have a common tendency to just kind of bypass responsibilities sometimes, you know, and just sort of like, woo, you know, you feel liberated and you just want to fly with it. So I definitely don't want myself to get myself into trouble by just kind of thinking that I'm better than I am. But I will tell you that my foot is extremely tender and sore, and it's not like I can't really actually just forget about it. You know what I mean? Like it's an ever present. It's not the kind of thing where I'm going to be on the dance floor being like, ooh, what foot, and just blow it over. Like it's very like I'm going to be taking very meticulous, meditated steps. You know, like everything will be calculated. I can't just run around. I can't. Not yet. It's very close. I probably shouldn't go, but I'm going to.
How are you adjusting that? Because you are like free spirit, like fly by the seat of your pants kind of gal, right? So How's this adjustment been? Has it been a psychological, like I was really impressed with, I watched one of your stories and all your routines and everything and how you're coping. But so like, this is a, like, I don't know, maybe it's a persona that you create that you're like this free spirit, but I think you're pretty genuine in that. So to be this like premeditated, like, okay, I'm going to do this and I'm going to be very deliberate. How hard is that for you?
Well, I broke my foot, the same foot, down by the fibula down at the bottom of my ankle, like 17 years ago. But I was a completely different person. I was a snowboard bum. I was reckless. I was partying. The fibula is kind of a joke. It's non-weight bearing. It only broke in one spot. That was a completely different me. I was like up at the ski hill. They made me a GT snow racer, these apron hanger handlebar things. And I'm like wrapped my cast in plastic and off I went and I'm partying. And like I would party uptown and my toes would be bright red and I'd look down and be like, oh, I better go home or I could stay till closing. You know, like a complete different ballgame. This injury is not funny. Like it's not, you know, it's completely different. Like my foot was very wounded. So I had absolutely no choice but to stop and sit. And to be honest, it was kind of like a natural progression. Like basically the whole entire first month, I was so injured and I was so hurt. I only got home like 12 days after the incident and my foot was crazy. I could barely like put it on three pillows without it hurting. Like a blanket through my cast felt like 1,000 pounds. Completely different injury. There was no room for me to mess around or play around, or so it kind of knocked me on my ass in a very sensible, like there was no room for me to be like, oh, screw it, let's just go uptown. Like I actually couldn't have it below my heart for the first month, you know, like it was a serious,
no, geez,
you know. And it's only my foot, it's isolated. Like I'm not trying to say that I had the craziest injury anyone's ever experienced. It still was like manageable, but it was definitely not something I could just slough off and be like, oh, fine, we'll heal it later. You know, so it kind of had its natural progression. It kind of like put me in my place, made me completely slow down. That whole entire first month was like for me to leave my recliner chair from watching shows to go to the bathroom and come back was a big mission. Like my foot would swell up, it'd get bright red, it'd be throbbing, it, you know. So there just was no room for me to be me. Like I couldn't have done it if I wanted to. It was just I was on protective mother mode. And then basically Christmas rolled around. My whole entire family showed up. It was perfect timing. My house got really lively. Everyone is here. My mom's dressed in like an elf costume, painting my toenails right. And it's like, and it was really fun. And I was still kind of hurt. I couldn't quite sit at a table yet. I couldn't put my foot down comfortably just yet. So that was probably the whole next month. And then I'd say the third month is when I started like playing around and having fun and sort of, but it was still low speed fun. So I think the idea of like, you know, me not being able to express myself on a crazy level, it just was very natural that I had no choice. And so, but I'm actually pretty proud of my mental status. Like I'm actually pretty happy with the way that I've just told myself to just do it. We're in it for the long run. This is a bit of a wild ride, you know. I just have to dig inside of myself and it's actually been very enjoyable. Like I haven't really minded it. Got me on, I don't know, just different things. It's like you just change your mindset. You have to deal with it. I don't know. Is what it is, you know. But it wasn't like it wasn't a playful injury. It's not like you hear about someone who gets something and they get a surgery and they're playing golf next month. Like it wasn't like that. I was really hurt. you know.
Well, the x-rays you shared online were, they were pretty scary. You know, just to look at and not be involved.
Well, it was kind of satisfying in a weird way when I got to that first Fernie hospital, because I only got into like medical care 10 hours after it happened. And by then my foot was like really swollen. That was actually probably the worst night of my life. Like, it wasn't like it was so bad. I was very happy with all the healthcare and everything, but it was crazy because my adrenaline had run out. They took my boot off. So now my foot's swelling, right? Cause it was not a turnkey, but they definitely put the tape on really tight while I was crawling, stopping that blood and all the things. And my foot was really cold. It froze up on the whole journey down crawling. So when I got to Fernie Hospital, it was like all the feelings were coming back. And the adrenaline had run out and my, you know, the swelling was happening. It was crazy. That was like almost more painful than the first hit. You know, I could forget the question.
No, I just made a statement about how crazy your x-rays were. And
oh, like, right. And
because
so
you had, it was multiple surgeries, wasn't it?
Yeah, there was two really. But I'm actually really lucky it was only two. But yeah, no, going back to the point there was that, yeah, so when they took the x-rays and they told me, in a weird, silly way, I actually had this awesome relief of happiness knowing that my foot was as damaged as it felt, because it was a weird feeling when they were calling for the helicopter. I was kind of doing the like, no, this can't be happening for me. You know, like you feel almost selfish or like you're abusing the system, or you're like, no way a helicopter should come for me. But once I realized how incredibly hurt my foot was, like it was blown right up, and the rock didn't roll over me. That wasn't a crush. That was the one surgeon said that was all just from impact. Like my bones just went boof, like they blew up, you know. And it definitely was kind of satisfying to know that it was as bad as it felt, if that makes any sense. You know what I mean? Like it wasn't, if they would have said, oh, you dislocated your big toe and you have a bit of a gash, I would have been like, oh, well, it's not what it feels like. Like I kind of wanted to validate the fact that it was as crazy of an experience as it was. And so all the broken bones, even though I wished they weren't as broken, it was just kind of a relieving feeling to know that, I don't know, that's a weird thing to say, that I'm happy they were as broken as they were based on the feeling and the injury.
Yeah, I kind of understand it because you're...
I'll stop shaking.
Obviously, you don't want to be that injured, but at the same time, you're like, okay, I am that injured. Like I needed the help. It wasn't me tapping out. It wasn't just giving up. You were.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, holy shit, I'm in it. I needed all of this.
Exactly. That was exactly it. Yeah. No, it was, and you know, during the whole getting off and crawling, I actually only allowed myself to really wiggle my toes twice because it was such an awful feeling that my foot was like, my boot was so soaked in blood and it was just, you know, really creepy to try and wiggle your toes. And you're like, oh yeah, no, that's, it's real, you know, inside of there. Cause Doran's like, what does it feel like? Like, what do you think? And I was like, I don't know what's going on. And I actually thought my foot was in a lot worse shape because to me, it felt like everything was really like crushed and all the, like the bones were mushy almost, you know, like super splintered out. So when I got down to the search and rescue and they actually took my boot off right there on the hillside, like it was, we had scaled all the crazy cliffs and all the crap. It was really quite wild. And when we met him in the bottom of the gully and then I told him, I said, my foot's actually so cold that it's starting to hurt me. Like it's starting to be a problem, you know, like it felt like frostbite was getting a hold and my foot was starting to hurt, even though I couldn't really feel the impact. But when they cut it off and like, Buddy's like, I'm going to take your boot off. I was like, no, I'm taking my boot off because I envisioned it being like swirled around and hanging on by two ligaments and just bleh, like, so when they actually took the boot off, my foot kind of looked like a normal foot. Like it actually had the right shape and it had a big gash. And I was like, that's actually not that bad. We were all kind of cheering. We're like, sweet, your foot's like, it's on, you know, because I didn't know what was causing all that bleeding. I couldn't understand what was going on in there. Like I just knew that it was pretty blown up. I don't know. First time that happened to me.
So, like, you had a cut on your ankle, yeah. Right? And then there was your foot cut up too then on the inside?
Just that one spot.
And then, yeah, that was a good...
It literally looked like it was trying to rip my foot off. Like, it looked like any more pressure, any more of that would have actually just ripped the foot right off. And the more we thought about it, we're kind of like, man, you know, that's the only spot on my body that was covered in leather. And it was like, creamed. You know what I mean? It was like if that would have grabbed my hand or my forearm, like it would have obliterated anything. You know what I mean? Like it was just, and then what people don't really know unless I tell them the story is that afterwards when the rock hit me, it actually violently spun me around. Like I remember my hair going crazy and it must have done a few loops and it slapped me on my back and it drug me downhill. I was like in this vacuum of like chaos. And in my mind, like, I don't know if I was screaming, but I was definitely inside my brain. I was just screaming, no, 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 over and over. And I was like clawing at the ground and stopping myself because there was such a bad set of cliffs right below us. I knew it. And the ground was super icy. It was rock hard frozen. I was just like, in my head, I thought while that vortex of chaos was happening afterwards, I just knew I was in trouble. I just felt bad. It was just like bad, bad, bad. In my head, I was like, no, no, no. And so when everything stopped and it went quiet, and I mean, it felt like it was 2 minutes, but it was probably like 10 seconds, you know, but when everything finally stopped and went completely quiet and I was just clinging to the mountain and I was like on my back facing downhill, I was so happy. I was so happy. I was just like, yeah, I'm on the mountain, you know, and the boys are running down towards me and they're like, did that hit you? Did that hit you? You know, and I was just, you know, I was just so happy that I was there. Like part of the trauma was me accepting the fact that I actually got away with it, you know, that I actually got to experience, yeah, you know, good, true luck. Cause I didn't know, you know, no one really actually knows. There was no recorded moments of it. We don't know how it all looked, but I mean, I just know that it was really crazy afterwards for a brief second. And I knew I was in big trouble. It felt pretty bad.
How long were you kind of, well, you probably don't know, it might've felt like a lifetime, but yeah. How long after you stopped was it until you realized like, ooh, I'm still in a lot of trouble? Because you had your happy to be alive moment, but then you're like, uh-oh, there's got to be something.
I would say that the true time between, I mean, it all kind of collapses on you at once. You know, it's like there's so many things that happen. Part of you is in complete disbelief that even happened, you know. And like the other boys were affected too, because when I looked up at the rock, it actually was catapulting over the heads of our client, Nelson, sorry, and then Grant, one of our other guides. And it was like sailing over the heads. Both those guys had to duck. And then it hit and smashed in front of me and bounced up at me kind of thing. Like everybody was in shock afterwards. So they're running down. They're like, did you get hit? And the funny thing is when you have these kind of accidents, because up north guiding, actually a horse hit my leg really hard. And it threw me way off into the rhubarb and I was like, oh, and Doran came running over and right away everybody wants to like touch your leg and touch your injury to try and assess it. But when you have that kind of like an impact and when shit hits the fan, it takes a bit for you to even really digest all those things. You know what I mean? So you're just sitting there kind of being like, whoa, and your body starts sweating and you're like, you know, you're in trouble. You can feel that like something's gone on. And then the boy's like, where? I'm like, the leg, the foot, you know? And it takes a bit for you to isolate even what you think is going on. You know what I mean? Like you don't, and my leg was pretty cut up all the way up too a bit. So it was kind of like I don't know, it just takes a bit for you to really gauge and assess and stuff like that. And then, I don't know. Yeah, you have to accept the fact that it is a big injury, you know, you have to kind of like, because part of you wants to be like, no, I'm fine. I want to walk it off. And then part of you is like, no. And it really was the big cut in the back and the bleeding that started that was really the big high alert situation that sort of changed it. It was bleeding a lot, you know, like Doran's hands were covered. My bag was covered. It was soaking through my whole boot down to my ass, covering like my jacket and stuff. Like I was like, at one point I asked Doran, I was like, do you think that's too much? Like, is this, are we in trouble here? Like this is, or is this bad? This feels bad, you know? So that part was kind of a little alert to reality, sort of, you know. That's kind of why the boys are like, well, we got to call the helicopter because we don't know what's going on. But it wasn't like I was missing a leg. It wasn't like, yeah, I don't know. It's kind of like on the line of like really big trouble, but it actually really wasn't that big of trouble because it was just isolated in my foot. You know what I mean? Kind of.
Yeah. But ironically, it could have easily been fatal too, right? Like, there's the element of like there was shithouse luck that you didn't die, but you could have easily died. Like,
oh,
the thing goes flying over Nelson's head and everyone else's head too. It could have been fatal to every like taking out three or four of you guys too, right?
Every single one of us is extremely aware of how incredibly violent that could have gotten, you know, like there, the part of all of us going into shock afterwards was the realization of how insanely awful that could have been. And it would have been like I thought about it, if that thing would have got me in the torso, it could have ripped my body in half. Like, and I'm not exaggerating, like it actually could have just gone poof. Because really, it just kissed me and I flew around a whole bunch afterwards. But if that thing would have hit me head on, like it would have been like spaghetti brain blow up, like unrecognizable face. And I'm not saying that to be theatrical. That's the truth. Like when you feel that power, like when that rock was around me, like I actually cried a lot the first week in the hospitals because I would just wake up with this feeling of that rock, that feeling, that energy, that power. It like would have smoked any one of us for sure, 100%, without a doubt. Dustin was actually the safest person, and Quentin, because Dustin was in the True Guts right by the ram. And then Doran was kind of going up the ridge to look for Quentin, who was on the other side of this little ridge, and he was working his way up. But really, it was like Doran, who was tucked on the spine of the ridge. And then Grant and Nelson were down below, and then I was below him. So really, there was the four of us that were in the way of it. And then Grant and Nelson got really close, and then with me, it just kissed me on the way by. But yeah, it was crazy. And when Doran saw it, he said it was, when he first saw it leave the cliffs, he said it was the size of a refrigerator. And when it got down to us, it kind of blew up in a few chunks and pieces. And I said that it was the size of like a shop garbage can, like those big black Rubbermaid garbage can things. That's crazy. Like even a rock the size of a football would completely obliterate your head. You know, a size that big would cream you, like blow you up.
Well, it's still the weight of a small car.
Yeah, totally. I've been talking lots about it, and you talk to a ton of people, and we have so many friends that have spent so many hours on the mountainside, and think about anyone you know that has rock stories. You know, it's really not that common. By the sounds of it, you know, and it was just a freak accident that it was that big. But you always hear of someone talking about rocks and things, and, you know, it's definitely a danger we know is out there.
But. So was it was just completely random too? Like that you just heard noise and looked up and there's a rock coming?
Yeah, Doran saw it. Doran heard it and saw it. And at first he yelled, rock, rock. And then it instantly just started charging. He said it was gapping like 150-yard gaps, just skipping down the mountain, you know, and his tune went from like rocks to like rocks, rocks. Cause at first when he yelled rocks, I didn't even look up. I was like, I probably just threw a few rocks at the boys below him and no big deal, you know, but no, I mean, it is what it is. And if I really do think about it, I mean, it was really cold. It was minus 15 nights. And then when we'd shot the ram and then we were kind of putting around and waiting for Doran and Quentin to come up because they were glassing from down below to keep eyes on the ram. As they were making their way up, it got really sunny. It got really hot. The snow got sticky. It got quite warm. You know, we were all taking our jackets off. So that is prime conditions for mountains to fall apart. That is a typical classic, you know, when there's water in and amongst the cliffs and then it freezes. So it expands, it pushes the rocks out. And then when that stuff melts, it's kind of like was spring-like conditions, but it was in, you know, early fall kind of thing, or late fall, I should say. So
this all happened in the evening then, I'm assuming?
No, it was like we think about 2:30, 3 in the afternoon.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, probably 2:30, 3.
So after, you know, after all of that goes down and they call the helicopter, but you got to figure out a way off the mountain after that point.
Like, I mean, I knew... Like, it was kind of interesting because I was accusing Doran of withholding information from me because I just had this feeling like he knew stuff and he wasn't telling me. It was just kind of like in this hypersensitive panic mode, you know, kind of. And everybody was quite level-headed and we were quite civilized. Like, I spun out of control right afterwards because I was facing uphill, my legs super hurt, and I kept looking at the cliffs above us and I'm just screaming, we got to get out of here. Like I was in panic mode. It was like being in World War III. You're like, yeah, you know, they're coming for us. We got to go. It was like a deep fear. I was shaking to my core. I was like, go, go. We got to get out. We got to, you know. And so once we humped over to a safer spot, then we started analyzing and started like making the calls and all the things. And then Doran, it was actually entertaining because we had cell phone service, but everybody's phones were dying. Nobody had a power pack. They're all like, oh shit. You know, there's all this added extra element of like, oh no, you know, we're falling apart. We might not have communication in a bit here. But we still had our in reaches and stuff. So once Doran was realizing that it just wasn't going to happen because the helicopters had to come from Fernie and it was getting too late in the day. And basically they would have needed somebody who had like first aid experience to come and yada, yada. And basically the helicopters know that what their time frame is. And they just basically called it off and said, it's just not going to happen. It's too late in the day. And then at that point, I could tell that Doran got the news and then he didn't really want to tell me. So I'm like yelling at him. I'm like, what the fuck did they say? You know, I just wanted to know everything. I just didn't want anyone to like beat around the bush and not tell me things. And Doran, looking back, was kind of worried about it because he thought that I would get really mad at the idea that the helicopter couldn't come. But that really wasn't the case. As soon as he told me the helicopter couldn't come, it was just like a factual. It was like, okay, that chapter is over. What's the next, you know, approach? And I asked Doran, I said, what did they suggest I do? And he said, well, you basically have two options. You either get comfortable and stay warm up here and wait for rescue to come up. And like, it was crazy where we were. And they were going to bring all this rope rescue. And I was just like, no fucking way. Like, it was crazy, the kind of pain that I was in. And trying to mentally like sit still and my body's going into these convulsions. The boys are like, are you cold? I'm like, I'm not cold. I'm like, I'm sinking. You know, like you can, it's a mind game to see if you can battle through that, you know? And now that everything's said and done, I'm actually really grateful for the experience because when else do you get to test yourself out like that? You know, at what level, you know, when else in life, like you can't face those things unless you're truly facing them. And at that moment I was just like, you know what I mean? Like I was kind of proud of my brain because I was antsy at the idea that like, okay, what are we going to do? But at the same time, you know, you can feel that you're getting sucked into this like sub reality, like shock wants you to not be there almost. It's trying to get you to like, I don't know, you feel lightheaded, you feel all these kind of crazy things. And I just knew, I'm like, when Doran said, well, you can get comfortable and get the boys to, you know, and at that point, all the guys had given me their puffies and everything. And I'm kind of making a nest and I'm getting warmer, but I'm still shaking. And I just knew, I was like, there's no way I can stay here. I just knew that. There's just no way. When Doran's like, the helicopter can't come. I was like, I can't, it's only going to get worse. And like I say, my foot's bleeding. I'm shaking. I'm like, I don't know. It just didn't. I just was like, nope. And I told Doran, I said, you know, because he said, do you think you could crawl? And I was like, it's worth a try. I said, you know, I might as well just try and see if it fails and I have to wait. It is what it is. But let's try to see if I can at least start getting closer. And it was kind of comical. Like by the time they taped up my foot, and they put two little sticks and I didn't think the sticks were big enough. I was like, that's a splinter. Like they didn't look. And then the tape was a bit too tight and they're like, no, it's good for you. You're bleeding too much. Keep the tape on tight. So, and then there's like blood all over the snow around me and I'm like leaving a bit of a blood trail and everybody's in shock. It was kind of funny. So we told the boys to go deal with the ram. Four of them went back. I said, I really want Doran to be my co-pilot because when you're crawling and you have a substantial injury, like the thing is my foot hurt so much to put it down. So the whole time I had it above my head and I'm like, okay, I'm about to start crawling. This is going to be crazy. And so I told Ben, I dictated him as my helper, my foot caddy. I was like, I need you to be really close to me and I'm going to crawl a little bit. And then I got to put my foot like, and then I just need you to hold it up. I just need you to like cradle it and just like literally hold it. And he's all stunned and he's in shock too. And I start kind of crawling. And from the moment I started crawling, I just kept going. I was just like, it just kind of felt good. I was like, oh, I'm burning energy. I'm moving. I'm going. And at first I was crawling through snow and it was kind of soft and it was fine. Grant had given me this really awesome pair of gloves, which I didn't realize I would need so much. But when he first gave them to me, I was like, oh, sweet. Sure. Thanks. Whatever. And then later I'm like, oh, you really need a big, powerful set of gloves because my hands were in the snow for like 5 hours just digging around. But yeah, once I started crawling and I started going, it kind of felt good, you know. It felt like my mind was being stimulated again. My foot was screaming. It felt like chaos, but it was, I don't know, it was like it became less of my immediate mindset, you know. Like it wasn't like you're just sitting under a tree thinking about it. I'm now kind of moving. And then, so yeah, I would crawl a little bit. And then at first, Ben wasn't quite on it. And I basically had to yell back at him. I'm like, no, Ben, I'm serious. You got to be like right behind me. And when I put my foot up, you got to hold it up. This is what we got to do. We're going to do this step by step by step. And he's like, oh, I get it. I get it. Okay, let's do it. So then once we built this little system, so Doran kind of was able to go ahead because he could run up and down and sort of be like, come up here, go down there, shuffle over here, you know, like, because I really needed him to do that because you can't do that while you're crawling with that kind of a injury, you know. And then so it ended up working out great. Once we kind of smooth out the wrinkles within the first 5 minutes, I was like, oh, this isn't actually that bad. You know, Doran's guiding the way. I'm crawling through snow. And through snow wasn't so bad because you can kind of like put your body imprint in there. But once we started getting on the sunny sort of melted sides where it was all shale, oh, my knee just took a shit kicking so bad. But you got adrenaline, you got things going, you know, like it was definite highs and lows. But we got to a couple really scary spots because eventually Dustin and the three other guys, they caught up with us and we could see their headlights. So I'm obviously a lot slower than them. They catch up to us. And right at that moment, we actually entered this like really sketchy spot. It was like super, super steep, super icy, cliffs fucking everywhere. And it was like rock hard ground. So even the crampons, and we couldn't dig into anything. And it was like bulletproof snow, so people were just like sliding and hanging onto trees, and it was definitely very quite terrifying. You know, we had to like limp backpacks back and forth, and at one point Dustin needed to come help me because if you don't have two legs, and I couldn't use my foot at all, like for nothing, I couldn't put it down, I couldn't rest it. So Dustin had to come and like stick his ski pole into the ground and kind of make fake steps for me so I could use my one foot. You know, and then there was a couple broken ski poles. So they gave me a couple broken ski poles. And then I started looking like Terminator 2. Is that where he's got those like creepy hands, those like metal hand extensions, you know? So I started having like my hands became, I don't know, little peg arms. So yeah, that really helped. But once we got past the skate park, I was crawling and stuff. And I was kind of having fun at that point, to be honest. Like, Dustin had given me an OxyContin, which I do recommend all people that do extreme mountain sports should definitely carry some high test medication in their first aid kit, because that shit really helps when people need it. And that opioid family, believe it or not, actually helps kind of keep the chaos out of it, out of your brain. Like, it's more than just a painkiller. It actually detaches you from, I don't know, like the intensity of it, I guess. So yeah, I was a bit high for sure, but I was cracking jokes and we're like getting through the chaos and I'm yelling back at the boys. I'm like, try crawling. It's easier because like two legs were sometimes harder, you know, and at that point, the little army, the red marching army of coats for the search and rescue were starting to come closer. We could see them coming kind of up the guts and we were getting closer to them and it just started feeling kind of good. You know, it was like, we're making it, we're doing it. This isn't that bad, you know, and I could feel that I was crazy exhausted. My pants were shredded. My knees hurt. But at that point, the cold of the night had actually helped my foot kind of not feel anything as much anymore. So I was kind of getting to a point where I didn't even need Ben to hold up my leg that much. You know, I could just kind of scooch around. I could kind of like put it on the ground, like sort of rest it. I couldn't put any weight, but I could just put it down, you know. So at that point, it actually wasn't even that bad, you know, And then, yes, we met Search and Rescue down in the guts. And that's when I told them that my foot was too cold. I could start feeling the pain of the frostbite hurting me. So that's when they decided they had to cut the boot off, or they just cut the stitch, the lacing out, and I took the boot off. But, yeah, I mean, it's a huge story still, you know, kind of funny.
Yeah.
I didn't want them to stretcher me out for the longest time because I felt so bad. And the one guy's like, because your mind, you know, you're trying to be so strong and you want to, you know, you feel bad that all these people are here for you. There was probably like 15 of them or 20 of them. There was one dispatch from Elkford and then two from Sparwood. And the one guy like held my shoulder and he looked at me and he's like, hey, we're here for you. We practice for these things. We're dying to carry you off. We'd love to help you. And I'm like, you're right. Okay, put me in the stretcher. And it's so funny because you get taped down and there's like seven people carrying you. And they're trying to tell me I'm light, but I can hear them panting and they're sweating and they're like tripping over all the hazards because we're still climbing through snow and rocks and all this shit. And they had to put me down every, I don't know, bunch of steps. Like it was kind of entertaining and we were cracking jokes and I was just chatting with everybody. It was kind of a cool ride, a cool experience, you know. I'm grateful they were there. And then, yeah,
we, it's,
Well, we saw the truck lights and stuff, and then everyone's cheering and they get me into the truck. But it was funny because for them, that was the pinnacle of their rescue. They're like, sweet, she's good. Woo. And then I was waving at him, being like, my journey starts here, assholes. I'm like, thanks for helping me off. And it's crazy. Like, it took me 12 whole days to get home. You know, it was a pretty big journey. Like, when I finally did it back in my living room, I was like, holy wow, that was like a time warp adventure. It was wild. That was a truly wild experience.
So you're saying it. You were in the Fernie Hospital for 12 days, or did you?
No. Fernie was like,
they just ship you somewhere else.
I got into the Fernie Hospital at 12:30 in the morning. And by the time the surgeon had dealt with all the things, like it's actually really good that I crawled off the mountain, because had I've stayed put, they would have had to really stop that bleeding, because it wasn't going to stop by itself. That was a big, huge gash. It was actually going for it, you know? And so it was actually funny, when I got in the first ambulance that went from Elkford to Fernie, this girl totally tricked me, the ambulance attendant. I forget what her name is, but she got this thing out. It's one of these cotting devices. You ever seen them? They like crack them open. There's some kind of a chemical in there. And she was like talking to me, and she just slapped this thing right inside my cut. And I was like, holy shit. It like hurt quite a bit, you know? And she's like, sorry, I knew I had to put that in there, but I just didn't want to, you know, like warn you or get you nervous or scare you. And I was like, oh my god,
yeah. Surprise.
Exactly. That's something we gotta do. Yeah, that Fernie night, I was only in there, so I got in about 12:30 in the morning. Then they got me in another ambulance to go to the Cranbrook Hospital, and that was at like 8 in the morning or something, 7 in the morning. But I really didn't sleep. That night was crazy. That was a wild, that was a really hard night for me. It was they couldn't get a handle on the pain, you know, because the swelling and basically the numbing, all the coldness I told you guys had like subsided. So now I had all the feeling in the world. And it was just, I had one nurse actually ask to hold my hand at one point. And I just looked up at her and I had like tears. Like I'd just been sobbing for like an hour, just trying to figure out how to deal with this, you know. And I'm like, hold my hand. I'm like, okay. And then I'm holding her hand. I'm like, this is so nice. I'm just crying to her. I'm like, thank you so much. Felt so good. Yeah, because they were blasting me all with all fentanyl and morphine and shit. Nothing was really working. It was definitely a very painful experience for quite a few hours. I guess when you get to those levels of high pain, it's really hard to knock it back down, you know? So yeah, the first time I got hit, the impact on the top of the mountain with the rock, that was crazy painful. And then that night in Fernie was crazy painful. And then the third blast of crazy pain was after my second surgery in Calgary, and that was 12 days afterwards. And my foot was like crazy yellow, blue, all kinds of colors, and really swollen. And then they go in and do a surgery. That really hurt. And when you wake up, you got almost no meds in you. And oh man, I was like hanging on to the hospital bed, just free, like I was kind of freaking out, you know. It's like out of my nature. Usually I'm so fun loving and hey, how are you, what's going on? But I was looking at the nurses like, is anyone coming to help me here? I'm like, I am dying, I am need some. And they gave me a big blast of ketamine, which I'd never had that kind of a dose before. It just sent me into la la land, cloud nine for who knows how long. Really helped out. But yeah, anyway, I think I skipped part of the story there of what'll happen.
Yeah. Were you ever at any risk of like losing your leg? Like, yes. Was there any real threat of that? Okay.
Yeah, they told me, because when I first got to Fernie, they were checking with an ultrasound in between my toes to find a heartbeat, because they got to find the blood pressure and stuff. And they had a really hard time finding it. It took them a long time. They had to like hush the whole room and kept putting gel all over. And they basically told me that from the point that you lose circulation and you don't have blood flow in your toes, you have basically 8 hours. So had I've stayed up on the mountain, they fully confirmed that I probably would have lost my whole entire foot just due to, especially that kind of cut and bleeding. And then you have to, because we would have had to stop it at some point. That would never have stopped. Because even in Fernie, the first doctor, probably at about 3:30 in the morning, he put those huge stitches in, like these huge rudimentary stitches. And he knew that wasn't the final product, but he's just holding it together until I get to go to Cranbrook. And then I think I slept for like an hour. It was just really not it was a really tough night for sure. But when I woke up and I kind of came to, that whole pillow was pretty soaked. It was pretty bloody. And the nurses, you know, they're trying not to alert me, but they're shuffling around, whispering kind of to each other, being like, oh, is that too much blood? Is that too much? Like, I knew what was going on. I'm like, oh, still a lot of blood, you know, and they're like talking about blood transfusions and things. So I looked online later. I guess you're allowed to lose like 2 liters before you're in complete trouble. And I don't know how much I lost up there, but it's quite a bit of blood for sure. Quite a bit. So I would say, yeah, I would was at risk of losing my foot had I stayed up there for sure. They told me that definitely would have been very serious. So that would have sucked to go through all that pain. Like that would have been so brutal to stay up there. I can't even fathom how awful. Like I just can't imagine what my brain would have done in that circumstance. And that wasn't even that bad of an injury. Like imagine if your leg was ripped off or something like crazy serious. But yeah, I definitely would have been really sad to suffer that much and then make it out of there and then get told you're going to lose your leg anyways. Like, fuck, I'm so glad I did what I did, you know?
Yeah, that's, that's a whole lot to take in.
Yeah, it is. And yet all in all, like the injury wasn't like, sure, it was kind of really bad, but it actually wasn't really that bad, you know, like it compared to how much more. And I was telling you guys that after I got hit and I got sucked into this vortex and all this stuff, like we definitely think that if that rock would have hit above my boot and caught me on the leg, it would have blown it off. Like I just can't imagine how it couldn't have, you know, it probably would have blown it off. Something really, really bad could have, you know, like happened. And the fact that my Achilles tendon got nicked, but it never got severed. You know, it severed the sheath that it rides and it severed a nerve right beside it, but it never got it. Like that's a miracle. And the fact that all my bones broke, but everything stayed aligned and stayed in place. And I only needed one surgery to put that one bone on top of my foot back in. So really, I'm so lucky. Like all the news I've had so far has just been like pretty good thumbs up compared to losing your foot. You know, I'd be pretty sad about that.
Yeah. Well, I'll thank you for posting the pictures of the cut online too. So I know when I was watching your story, the first one you posted or the reel, and it got to that point, I was like,
ooh, sweat.
Oh boy, this is bad.
Well, and I was laughing my ass off because I made that whole thing while I was in the hospital. And I was just laughing. I was like, oh, this is going to be hilarious. This is going to fuck people up. I just wanted it to be this racy, flashy, bzz, 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 like tons of chaos. And I just thought it was so funny. And I actually hit post prematurely. I didn't mean to. I kind of working on it because Instagram lets you work on things and then you can store it as a draft for a bit. So all of a sudden I hit post, and if you delete it, you have to delete the whole thing. And I was like, oh, I didn't really plan for this to happen right now. And I'm just sitting there sweating. I'm like, oh shit, this is going to draw a lot of attention. And I knew it was going to like be a really good video for people to watch, but I didn't realize it was going to get that much attention. Like I think every single person in Fernie saw it at some point. Yeah. But it is what it is.
Yeah, that it blew up pretty quick, that reel, I would say. I think everybody was sharing it. That thing, yeah, I don't even, but that's got to have a few views on it. But we kind of skipped over a whole other part of the story.
What's that?
We never talked about what got you in that situation, what led up to it.
The sheep hunt?
You were on a sheep hunt.
Yeah, exactly. What else did you be doing up there at that time of year?
Well, and a puke, right? Like a 195 and 6/8, just a tiny ram, right? A squeaker.
Yeah. So, do you know how old he was? Do you guys hear?
No.
He's 8.
No.
Dude. His growth rings were like half a foot wide, right at his crown. Like it was, he's huge. He just had his body was massive. Like that guy had some big old genetics going on. Yeah, I counted him like a bunch of times. I was in disbelief. I'm like, Dustin, is he really 8? And we're like, yeah, he's 8. And I'm like, that's awesome. He's big.
That ram really helped pump up the numbers for the
yeah
the sale of that tag again this year. We smashed all the records. It went with 430,000.
Yeah, that's amazing. Crazy. I'm happy that. And that's like a big thank you to Dustin. Like Dustin Rowe, you know, there's a reason why he's sought after as a big guide. Like he is pretty amazing the way he put in like really number crunching and specs and you know, finding that ram and stuff. And you know, it takes a lot, you know, because it's deceiving sometimes. You get bigger bodied rams, smaller body rams. It's hard to know. It's kind of like when you're goat hunting, like what's the difference between a 9.5 inch billy versus the 10 inch billy, you know? And we all knew that ram was huge and massive, but we're like, is he really? Like, you know what I mean? Like sometimes you can get the tighter curls that deceive things a little bit, but Dustin's really quite phenomenal at his true science of it all, of really determining You know what I mean? Like all of us were like, oh yeah, he's big. Like we all knew he was over 190 pretty much. Like we really felt quite firm about that, you know, but it took a bit. It took a few nights in the wall tent, just really bringing him up on the big screen. And there was actually two rams and we were trying to decide which was the bigger of the two. And they had quite different characteristics, but we really thought this guy, he was less chubby, but he was longer and lower slung. So we figured he would get better numbers, higher numbers with that. Yeah, it was big ram, huge, beautiful. I really made it worth it for sure.
Have you ever guided the Premier's tag holder before?
Yeah.
The Minister's tag holder?
Yeah, I did one 3 years ago also through, who was it through? It was just kind of a friend of a friend. Basically, they were just asking around. They're saying, hey, this guy's got the Premier tag. And he, you know, it's really funny. He told me he grew a lot of dope to get it. He was like a pot farmer and he's like, I just paid cash. And he had the Premier tag, but he was more of like, he didn't pay any one of us or there was no, it wasn't an official guided job. It was just kind of like, you know, us kids in the valley all eager to be like, yeah, let's go find big rams, you know. And we could have found a bigger one with that guy, but he was not as athletic and he wasn't as into it. And so he was just like, no, that one's good enough. And I think that one just made 180 slightly over. So, but yeah, that was my second one, which was really nice. Super fun. It's, you know, and obviously now in BC, everything's on limited entry. So anytime you get a chance to join along a bighorn hunt, it's just so exciting. Really feels like an honor, you know, it's like special. And obviously that tag's nice because the sheep, you know, they're kind of unobtainable for the normal residents just because they don't, you know, you only catch them on their true wintering grounds and stuff. They don't leave those coal mines. So it's really special to catch them late season. That ram probably could never have been hunted by residents because he just never would have left the securities of his mine, you know, in time for the season to end. Yeah.
So what was it like being on that hunt? Like you, so
oh, it was I guess awesome.
You guys had them all scoped out ahead of time, knew what you're dealing with. Was that before Mitchell showed up or were you there with Mitchell and like kind of in the field, like field judging him?
Yeah, he came pretty much right from the start. Like he was game for all of it. He wanted to see them and stuff. And there was actually quite a few days where all of us had spread out and, like me and Grant had taken Nelson up a drainage with the horses and stuff like that the one day. And we booted way into the back and there was actually rams everywhere. It was super fun. And then Doran and Ben from New Zealand, our other guide that works with us, they were going up into these other draws and there was tons of sheep there. There was like, but they just wasn't any like big 190s. They were big rams. They were really impressive, but we were like, they're just not quite in that 190 mark. And then Dustin and Quinton, they were the ones that were driving up the main valley of the Elk River and they were going like digging pretty deep on the north end of this one coal mine. And Doran and I had actually found them. It was really nice because there was fresh snow. So Doran and I had found rams, but we were just too far away because we were on the other side of the valley. So we had told Dustin, we said, there's rams there. You should go check them out, but go on the closer side. So it was just the way everything worked out. So all of us had kind of spread out. There was quite a few days beforehand that we were all sort of ripping around, judging, and some of us would take off hiking. Sometimes we'd take the horses. I think we did 2 days with the horses up different drainages, and there was rams everywhere. It was really, really fun, and they were getting all frisky. It was a very fun time of year to watch them. You know, it's like they're getting with their ewes. It's very entertaining. It's very lively, active. Nobody else is around. Typically in the sheep world, you hide your secrets. You don't want to tell anybody. You see a ram, you're like, it's the most quiet, secretive thing. You go home at night, you never want to whisper a word to anybody. But this was fun to be a part of like a big group mega mission where it's like, oh, what'd you see today? Like we all kind of met back at our main wall tent. We had quite a cool wall tent set up. Like it was really lush, pimp, beautiful, nice winter wall tent camping, you know. It was really well done. And then yeah, when Dustin got his eyes on that big guy, then we pretty much couldn't find anything else that matched that one, so he became our focus of attention. And we kind of lost him the one day, and then we went up early in the morning and we just saw him in the same spot we had tucked him in from like 2 days ago or what have you. And then we just went up and it was just textbook. It was a beautiful, beautiful hunt. We navigated our way through an old burn. We got up to the top. It was really shitty footing. It was like rock hard, slippery snow, but we got up there and we pretty much got on this knife ridge and we get up into the sun and we have glassers down below. Everything was like textbook. This ram wasn't going anywhere. And yeah, we just got right up there and we actually got really close to him. He was really close to us, but he was too close. We couldn't make a move. So we're all kind of hunkered down below this little knoll. And once they were distracted and this big boy that we were chasing was with a ewe, and they kind of were looking at us. They were just sort of like, we weren't busted, but they were definitely, I don't know. They just, sometimes sheep do that where they just sort of stand still in one spot and their eyes are just sort of alert. And yeah, and so once they started forgetting about anything and they started moving around a little bit again, and Nelson couldn't quite get them in the scope at the beginning, you know, because sometimes when they're so close, it's so exciting. The ram's there. He's massive. Like, there's a lot of pressure for the shooter, for sure. And so the ram deked around a little bit of brush and some just like sticks and stuff. And then he's off onto this cliff face. And if you did watch that video that I put online, right when you see like he's sort of going through these like cliffs, the ram was actually alerted to us and was basically running away from us. And all of us are holding our breath being like, oh shit, no. Like, we had just done everything we could to get right into position. And basically it was like getting Nelson into position to shoot alerted the ram. And once the ram's on the run, then shit can get bad quick, you know. But Nelson just did a really good job. It was a one-shot wonder. He definitely shot the ram while he was on the run, and then shot again. And then by the ram had actually gone around the corner, and that's where Doran and Quinton, who were down below, and they were just glassing the whole entire face, you know, as one big wide open wall. So they told us and alerted us that the ram had gone down and that he was dead laying in the chute in the gully next to us. So we were all super celebratory and it was awesome. And yeah, he's a huge ram. It's a beautiful thing to walk up on too, you know. He's very, very, very handsome ram. And yeah, that was a really fun part of it for sure. And we actually hung out in the drainage. We were waiting for Doran and Quinton to hike up for, I'd say, a couple of hours, like, that we were, you know, starting to take pictures. And we had actually pulled the ram up and we made a snow bench for him and got the pictures scene ready, you know. And yeah, so everything was really quite peaceful. The day was getting warm. Things were happy. Everyone was feeling great, you know. And then the rock just came and shittered it all up.
Ruined a good time.
Just added an extra element to the story, really. I can say that because I didn't die. Yeah, no, forever, for sure. It was awesome. I hope I get to do it again.
So tell me about this rock one more time. So this thing literally was way above you and it let go. Is that what happened?
Yeah. Basically, we were in a really tight, steep little chute. And it was kind of just a really kind of bad cliffs above us. They were definitely the kind of cliffs that are, you know, they're tiered. They're like true cliffs, you know, but they're loose kind of rock, you know. It's kind of like, I wish I was a geologist to better describe it, but it definitely was, now that I look back on it, that would definitely be a somewhat of a danger hazard to keep your eye on, you know. It's one thing that I hope in the future that when I go back up into sheep country that I'm not totally like total pansy, or I don't turn into a basket case, you know. Like, I just don't know what my mind's going to be like once I'm back up there. I guarantee you I will forever be looking up and thinking about stuff. But if we really think about it, the way it was so cold and then warm during the day, I mean, it's kind of a no-brainer. Like, it really is something that us as fellow sheep enthusiasts should talk about on podcasts like this and just alert the general public and be like, when your hackles are up and when you think about things and you can feel weather changing, you know, because that's when mountains fall apart, is when there's change, right? Is when it goes from cold to hot, is always when you'll see cliffs like fall apart and crumble or slides take off. You know, it's when you have the temperature changes, and typically from cold to hot will be when it happens. So really, we should have known. It definitely was giving us all the signs. I do a bunch of ski touring too. It's the same thing. Whenever you ski tour in the springtime, you just know, you know, when you get those really warm days that things start falling apart. Get shmooey snow.
Yeah, I always like to tell people, like, that will hunt shoots for bears, like, if you're driving down the road and there's rocks on the road,
yeah,
if you're on the highway and the rocks have come down onto the highway, you don't want to be spending time in your chute.
That is a very good point, Greg. That is actually something that's very notable to take note of, for sure.
It's a scary situation, and I'm sure you'll be a
little bit
rabid, wanting to get across them quickly.
Well,
what's your, yeah, What's your thoughts on the do you think there's an element of PTSD, like you talked about, you know, maybe being a pansy or triggered or whatever? Do you think there's an element of PTSD there involved? Have the doctors talked to you about that at all?
I didn't talk to doctors about it, but when I had my first ambulance ride that went from Fernie Hospital to Cranbrook, there was actually two dudes, and I knew one of them, Eric. He's a first aid attendant, like a ambulance attendant. And then there was another guy, Cloud was his name, super cool name. And then I told him, I don't know exactly what I was saying, but I said something along the lines of like, I'm rattled, like I'm terrified, like I can feel it in my core, like I hope this feeling leaves me. Like it's like I'm really scared, but obviously I'm completely out of danger. Like, and then he told me, he's like, yeah, I know PTSD is a real thing. He's like, trauma is a real thing. He's like, your best thing that you can do for yourself is to talk about it. Talk about it a lot, you know, alleviate the stress of holding it in by just letting it out, kind of thing. And obviously I've been telling the story a billion times and to my friends and all the things, but I understand how that's true, you know. And I realize that trauma isn't always something that's like a danger or a rock. You know, it can also be something that happened that's really shitty in your life, and maybe it's not as easy to talk about it. And I don't know what other tactics, like I shouldn't even get into what I think is the right thing to do, but I would say that PTSD is a definite, like I now sympathize. My mind has been opened towards people that have these real situations that have come up in their life for whatever reason. And it's the biggest spectrum ever. Like PTSD and trauma can happen with a million different things, I'd imagine, you know? So I do feel for people that have lingering panic feelings. And I mean, I don't want to toot my own horn or anything, but I do know that I have like a pretty strong mind. Like I know that I'm capable of absorbing something, understanding it, accepting it, and moving on. But I do realize that if somebody were to not be able to fully digest it as well, or, and I'm not just talking about rocks falling from the sky, like I'm talking about anything or even car accidents or just, but I do realize that that is a very, very true feeling. It's a very, very true state of all encompassing, like it's your mind, it's your body, it's all the things, you know. And I really realize that I will always have a soft spot for people that say that they have trauma in their life or something happened, because it's real. It's scary, and I'm sure it could live and fester in dark places. But for me, mine was a happy ending, and it was a victorious story, so it's easy to get through it, you know. But I'd imagine if it didn't go well, or if it's, I don't know. Yeah, no, it's real for sure. That feeling of that rock was very, very predominant for quite a long time, giving me very like heavy chest, scary feelings, like scared feelings. So, but it left me pretty quick. It wasn't that bad. But you almost have to like, you know, because it was a near-death thing, I had a lot of cries. Just even, I had one actually just last night. Me and Doran went over to my brother's house. We were watching a Winnipeg Jets game. And it's something we love to do, is just watch hockey, watch with my brother. It's not even like I'm that into it, but we just have fun. And now that I'm crippled or whatever, right, let's watch some shows and do some stuff. And we're over there and we're cracking jokes and we're like, you know, having snacks. And for whatever reason, I forget the exact context, but I was going to tease with the boys and say to them, I said, oh, would you still be watching this game if I would have died? And I only thought the question, but then when I started thinking about it, now all of a sudden I start crying and I'm like bawling my eyes out, but I'm completely laughing at the same time, because I think it's so funny that I'm trying, like I was going to ask them this question, and now I'm actually crying because I'm like, oh, that would have been so sad if you guys were here 3.5 months later, thinking about how we used to watch these hockey games together. Now Tannis isn't here anymore. Like, you know, and that's obviously many months afterwards, but those feelings were a lot more concentrated when this first happened. Like it took quite a bit for me to like accept the reality that I did get away with it and I was lucky, you know, like it's, there's a certain level of acceptance that you have to, I don't know how to explain it. Yeah. It's a reality check for sure. There's something to be said about how a big issue like that can play games with your mind, you know, a lot of it.
So you're pretty footloose and fancy free, right? You're like a free spirit.
The old me.
Was this a, yeah, that was my question. Was this a, like a check on your mortality? Was this
no
like life changing for you, where you're like, you know, has it really changed you as a person? Like, it's changed your perspective, clearly, but has it changed? Is there a new Tanis because of this?
Like, are you saying that I'm going to slow up and maybe not be as risky?
Well, just like does it change your perspective on life? Is life more precious? Is there more of a sort of a reflection on your mortality? Like, yeah, I'm not intangible. Like, I'm not, I actually could die out there. That's a real thing. Like, I'm not saying you weren't reckless before, but probably weren't as cognizant of it, right?
I would definitely say that in the beginning, when I was dealing with the aftermath of the feelings of this whole event, I even actually right in the very beginning, right when that rock passed and I was like, oh, and they're limping me up to the trees and we're dealing and we're assessing with all this stuff and calls to the helicopter and stuff. Like, I was completely rattled to my absolute core as to the idea that that could have been the moment that I never got to live another second on Earth. And I despise that feeling. Like, I despise that reality because I absolutely, with all of my heart, do not want to die right now at this age in my life. I truly feel like I have so much more to do. I feel like I love life so much. Like, it made me just, I'm not saying everyone else doesn't, I'm not saying I love life more than other people, but I'm just saying, like, in the true deep core of my personal being, I really realize, I'm like, oh my God, I do not want to die. Like, just that feeling of like, it'd be so sad. And I mean, I'm not really religious. I don't believe in anything. Like, I truly think that if I would have just been hit and crushed and blown to pieces and would have died, it would have been sad. And what I was telling Doran, I was like, the saddest part is that at my life in the world and everything would have gone black and dark and dead and gone and done. Your life's over. You have no more chances. You can't enjoy anything more. But I just would have felt so sorry for Doran and having to go back and face the town of Fernie and tell people and deal with, like, it just would have been so sad. Like, I just don't want things to be sad like that in life. You know, like, it 100% for sure. But since now things have subsided and I don't feel that kind of, like, it's not as strong of a pressure feeling, you know, anymore. But yeah, for sure in the beginning. But no, I definitely feel very eager and ready to. But I mean, I'm always living life and doing stuff anyways. Like, me and Doran this winter were actually supposed to go on a 3-month-long road trip, take our dog, go down to Mexico, surf. We were going to stop in Texas, visit some friends. We were going to go to Nevada, the sheep show. We're going to guide a whole bunch of desert sheep and stuff. So I, you know, we're a little bit bummed out that we couldn't go do all that stuff, you know, but I'm very keen to continue that dream for next year and stuff like that, you know? So yeah, I definitely would say it's not like I'm going to go live life more because I feel like I'm already at the apex of living it up type of thing. And that sounds cocky and I don't mean to be, but I just mean that in the best way possible but I do feel that I realize, I mean, I've always known that you can die quickly and easily. I've always known that humans are very fragile. We haven't been built very strong, but I have always resented the idea of dying in a car crash. You know, I've never wanted that to be my fate. So I've had a couple chuckles with the idea that had I died that day, it would have been awesome. You know, if you're going to go and you got to go, like, that would have been fucking pretty cool story, a good finale. I don't know. It is what it is. It's kind of, yeah, no, it's a true brush of death. And I really hope I don't get to experience that again. I hope nobody really comes that close because that's terrifying. It's not worth it really, you know, to get shooken up like that isn't really worth, I don't know, the feeling. Like, we should all just know that we get to live our lives and we should be very happy for that every single day, you know, all the time. You don't have to almost die to feel that, hopefully.
Yeah. From a recovery perspective, so there's this Mexico trip and you're prepping for that. Do you feel like this is going to be like 100% full recovery? You're going to be the old Tanis. You'll be kicking ass as much as you've always been. Or do you feel like this fall, it's going to be a bit of a challenge for you?
Yes, I believe fall will be a challenge for me.
Right.
So the first 3 months, you're non-weight-bearing. When you break all those bones and you break your heel that much, you can't touch it for 3 months, right, on the ground. And then you wait and wait and wait for that moment. And then when I got the A-OK to be like, okay, you can start doing stuff. Since I've been putting my feet on the ground and starting to use them, I realize that I'm actually up against something pretty substantial, you know, like It's not only all the broken bones, because they'll heal and your foot kind of changes shape and stuff like that, but that can be worked on. But now I got this big massive gash in the back, which is like the stitches were in for a whole entire month. Then the last of my scab only left like 14 weeks afterwards. Like I'm only 1 week scab free. Like it was a very big, so you can imagine the scar itself is massive back there. It's really bound me up. So now that I've been able to use my foot on a super small little level, it is a reality check that I realize I'm like, ooh, it's going to be, you know, it's got my work cut out for me for sure. But I'm always optimistic and I truly feel positive. And I do, yes, 100% feel that I will get myself back to normal. I just have to live on that. And I have a physiotherapist, Laura Rankin. She's a really good friend of mine. And she told me, because I sprained my ankle before last season, and she was telling me, she said, hey, most people, they'll heal themselves up to about 85%. You're feeling good, thumbs up, you get back to work, your normal life. You don't round off that last 15%. And she said, that is the difference between lifelong limping injuries versus you could have, you know what I mean? You always hear about people like, oh yeah, they got the arm shoulder thing, you know, and they should have done their therapy, but they just didn't because it's good enough. So they carry on in life and now they have this like bunged up, but you don't realize that you can break down that scar tissue. You can bring back the range of motion. You know, you don't have to be gibbled up, but of course your life is busy and therapy is expensive and all the things. But for me, on a personal level with this foot, I feel very, very determined that I'm going to try absolutely my hardest right to the very end to try to get it completely back to normal. Whether it's possible or not, I don't know, because they talk about chronic stiffness and arthritis and things can sort of set in, but I'm just going to try and beat it. Fuck those guys, right?
There you go.
I don't know. It is what it is. I'm going to try. And then I have 5 screws that are on the top of my foot. One's kind of long and the other 4 a little. And I asked the surgeon, I said, hey, you know, are we taking those out later? And he said, nope. And then I saw my surgeon again a month later. I said, hey, do you really know what my job is? I was like, you know, are you sure that's not going to come out? Because I was like, we're talking like 100-pound backpacks on super steep terrain. You know, like that's, I don't know if I want metal in my foot. And he looked at me and he's like, Tanis, we can't take that metal out. It has to live inside you. He's like, you'll be fine. So I feel pretty good about that. So really, I don't have many things aside from the big cut and scar in the back that's going to hinder the length of my Achilles and the ability to get that full range of motion. But other than that, I should be able to really recover it all. I hope. I think I'm anticipating it. I think I'll be sheep guiding in August. I'm really banking on it. But I did do the math the other day and I'm like 4.5 months. So that was kind of an eerie feeling, like, oh, maybe not. But no, I'm gonna try really hard.
Do you have day pain? Like, is it painful? Like, or you just wake up and your leg hurts? Or how, like, what's your status on that?
I got a really high pain tolerance, to be honest. And I mean that in just straight plain honesty. It just is what it is. But I laugh when people ask me that, kind of, because when I went through the pain that I went through, you know, I sent my friend this one picture because I actually got this setback. I got an infection in there and I sent him a picture and it only lasted 10 days. Antibiotics got rid of it, which is really good. But because my scar in the back is so insanely sensitive to get an infection, it all blew up and got really swollen. It hurts so much. So I sent him a picture and he's like, oh my God, that looks like that hurts so much. And I was like, that? I was like, thank God you weren't there night number one. And I was like, thank God you weren't even there the whole entire first month, because that was really painful, you know. But right now, I would say it's more of an ache and it's more of like, I don't know, it's like a hindrance. I wouldn't say that I feel pain right now. I don't know. I wouldn't call that pain. But I mean, I could see people still eating pain meds and stuff now, but I got rid of those like a month in pretty much. I just wanted to feel it out. So I wouldn't call this an actual pain related status that I'm in right now. It's more of like a discomfort and stiffness and kind of like achy and just annoying.
Do you have a sense of trepidation going to Mexico? Are you nervous about it, or are you just like, no, fuck it, let's get on with it, I'm excited?
No, I'm really, really excited for sure, and I have the fuck it attitude, but I also realize that I have to rein in my own horse. Like, I can't follow anybody around. Dustin was saying, he's like, oh man, because I showed him that I've been walking around the house a bit. And he's like, oh yeah. He's like, you're going to be able to hike up to the Palapas, because you got to do these little hikes to get up to these shady sort of areas they've made just for glassing. And I said, well, I'm not going to win the race. And I said, don't wait for me. But I said, I will get up there, you know, eventually. I just have to avoid uneven ground. I haven't had any practice on that really. and because it's Mexico, and I don't want to bring my walking boot. I'm kind of caught in a pickle because I know that the walking boot is really like a good brace, but it's really hindering me from like moving my actual foot. So the way I envision it is I'm just going to bring the best footwear I can. I just spent a whole bunch of money on these really nice orthotic kind of the running shoes, actually. And they're made for, they got soft, spongy heels, and they got this rise in the back, and then they got rocker motion. So they're actually made for people like me that have like bound up feet, I guess. So I'm going to bring a pair of those, and they look like old lady, senior citizen, midlife crisis kind of shoes. So this is going to be the new me, you know, because there's nothing I can do about it. I can't wear flip-flops. I got to start getting into the good footwear, right? This whole entire year, probably too. I'm probably really going to have to watch that, make sure that, because my heel is very sensitive. Like it wants support and cushioning, right? I can't just wear a flat shoe and walk around. It's got to be the right. So yeah, I'm going to wear the right footwear, and I'm just going to try to take it slow and just try to run my own show. I'm not just going to push it for other people. I got to actually just say it and put my hand up and be like, I'm not comfortable with this. So I'll figure it out. I'll be fine. Everyone's aware of what state I'm in, so I'm just going to just go with it, you know.
They'll probably be babying you. You'll probably be like, leave me alone. Just let me do my thing, all right?
Oh, yeah. I hate getting babied. My brother is like the sweetest guy in the world, and he's coming over. But in the beginning, he was like trying to fluff up my pillows and move and get me comfortable. I'm like, dude, get out of here. I'm like, I can figure my shit out. I know when I'm not comfortable.
Awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. You guys ever had big injuries like this or something, or any kind of pins, needles?
No, but breaks? Also, I'm not a real hunter either.
No. So, you're a conservationist.
No, I've never had anything. Yeah, I've never had really anything serious in the backcountry. Just stupid shit. The worst I ever did was I had a neck knife and a neck knife. You know, like you put them around your neck. Knife. And they, like, anyway. So, and I was, like it goes around your neck, yeah. And it's got a sheath, and and it was the first time I used it. I'm an idiot. And I think we were hunting in Tatsumini. And so it was really weird. I didn't put it in the sheath properly, and I had it inside my shirt. So I'm like literally hiking up the mountain and like sheep hunting. And I realized my knife is sticking out of my shirt, and then my hand comes up and I see it. And the webbing of my hand, it just sliced right open my webbing and wide open. And I could literally see inside my hands, the tendons in my hand and everything.
Oh, no.
And there's no blood or anything. It was the weirdest thing. So we just got some, I don't know, super glue out and glued it up. Like that was kind of the worst of it. So.
Oh, nice. Yeah. That's a good.
Nothing serious, but very stupid. Don't wear your neck knife when you're like doing like intense hiking on the mountain. I learned something from that day, but.
Well, as soon as you said that, I was like, that's not the right combo for me. A guy like me is too clumsy and shit. I'd fall. I'd stab myself in the heart for sure.
Well, it could have easily impaled me, right? Like, exactly. You know, you got your pack on and you're going through the bush and like really, really stupid on my part, right? But anyway, c'est la vie.
Hey, we're learning.
Yeah.
No, I've been lucky in the backcountry. I've never had any bad injuries, knock on wood. Yeah. All mine come from work and sports.
Yeah, it's still, you know, you got to face those recovery battle times and things, you know, dig inside of your mental psyche. All injuries.
Yeah, I had to learn how to walk again when I was 17, so I get it.
Yeah, crazy.
So you're back in the cycle for 2025. You'll be at Sheep Week. We're going to get you to our show next year. We're going to twist your arm. We'll come out in Cranbrook or Fernie and pick you up and bring you out to our show in Penticton. But we'll have you on the podcast at Sheep Week again, because it's always so much fun and everyone wants to come and hang out and see you and drink beer with you.
Thanks. It is really fun. I do enjoy them. I always feel guilty that I just talk so much. I just ramble. And I like my stories all bounce around, you know, I just feel like my head's like, oh yeah. And then this and that, and it reminds me of that. And this, like, and I listen to other podcasts where people are very intelligent and meticulous and they think about things and they got like a lot of like scientific things to say. And I realize that I'm just a big goof out here in the world, but we need those too, you know?
Hey, we love not having to drag the story out of you.
Oh yeah, not a chance.
That's all we can ask is you do all the talking. If we don't speak, it's even better for everybody.
Okay, well, we probably nailed that. I'm pretty good at just talking my
Well, that's awesome, Tanis. No, thank you for coming on, and hopefully we can do this again soon. And we're just super glad that you're back in the saddle, kind of, I guess. And but let us know how Mexico goes. I'm really curious to see how your foot performs and how you're feeling. And yeah, just super happy that you're not dead. That's really good.
Oh, me too.
Yeah.
It's definitely when you face that, you definitely open your eyes big time, for sure, as to like how much it's really a gift to live, you know. It really is, and we really should all take full advantage of that.
Well, and I have to give you kudos. Like, I'm really impressed with, I was watching some of your stories there, and like how dedicated you are and how like disciplined you've been and how serious you've taken this. And that's really cool that you've got this mentorship from your physio and your support team, and that you're doing all the stuff and that you're committed to being 100% healthy. That's really, really cool. Although you are, I guess, taking some risks going to Mexico, but you're being smart about it, right?
So. Yeah. I mean, I also plan to go to Montreal with my mom in the beginning of May. I'm supposed to go do a road trip to the coast in April. I have like all these little other things planned. I'm like just planning things coming for spring and summer. I was like, oh, I should. And I actually, no, I'll be fine. My biggest thing is I just want to keep up with my physio out there. I'm kind of addicted to it. Even now, like, knowing that this podcast is coming to an end, I'm definitely excited to go. I've been looking at my little workout disc and my rolling ball under my foot and stuff like that, you know. And it can be really frustrating. Like yesterday, I had to resort back to being on crutches because my heel was just throbbing. My heel is a real big pain in the bitch, you know. Like it's angry all the time, kind of, you know. So yesterday, I had to like set back. And in my head, all of this is new to me. So I'm kind of like, oh, I really hope that like some days are going to be bad. But as long as those good ones can still show up, you know, I would hate to have it. And I know when things are sore, I got to let off and like stop doing things. So I'm starting just to learn about, because you get impatient. You're like, you want to do so much, but you can't actually do that much because your foot starts throbbing. So it's like ice physio, this, that. And you go uptown, you go party, do some, whatever. And then you come back, ice, this, that. You know? So as long as you can do more progressive, then you do less, you know. I just hope that I don't have any hiccups where all of a sudden it's like, oh, my heel's not getting better. You know, I just have these phobias of like something's not getting better if it's sore. But so far it's sore for a day and then it gets better and then it will up, down a bit, you know. So. Mm-hmm. Getting there. Mm-hmm. I'm getting there.
Awesome. Well, thanks again. Yeah. Appreciate your time. And can't wait to... Are you doing any, can you spring bear hunt? Are you going to do any spring bear stuff or what?
I don't think I'm going to plan any mountainous things.
Yeah.
So unless we're getting any truck shots off the hood or just kidding. Yeah. No, I don't think I'm going to plan any sort of rigorous mountain things just yet. I feel like even August 1st for sheep will be a stretch for me for sure. And I'm going to have to talk to Dustin about bringing along a little pack goat because I don't think I can carry that heavy a bag. Especially after a kill. Mm-hmm. So we'll see. I'll play it all by ear. It is what it is. I mean, I'm just going to try my hardest to keep at it. But the way it's been going, at the rate it's been going, I do feel pretty good about it getting pretty strong. Like I can stand on the sore foot and sort of balance and hold my hands out and stuff like that. So I'm like, that's actually pretty good. Getting stronger.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome. Love
I'll
it.
Let you know.
Well, thanks again. And we'll do this again soon. It's been fun. And good luck in Mexico.
Thank you. Thanks, guys. Have a good rest of the week.
Thank you.
This episode is sponsored by our conservation partner, Yeti. Thank you, Sitka Gear and Yeti, for investing in healthy wildlife and sustainable ecosystems.